Speaking of.
Here we go. Okay, so this afternoon, I'm not sure if we're going to cover all of Parak Gimel, because there's a lot going on in Parak Gimel with Shmuel Beis, and we need to set some things up, introduce a whole bunch of personalities, so it's possible we'll stop like two-thirds of the way through the Parak. But the good news is that Parak Dalet is shorter, even though there's a lot going on there too. So either way, we'll definitely finish Parak Gimel and Parak Dalet by the end of next week in Meretz Hashem. We'll see where exactly we end up dividing things. So where we ended off last week was we had the civil war between Yehuda and Binyamin. It was pretty depressing. It was very depressing. The death of Asael, the brother of Yoav and Avishai. We were introduced to Yoav for the first time. We saw the outstanding military skill of Yoav and Avishai on the one side and of Avner on the other side, and the, you know, kind of the irony that we have incredible generals, but the leadership they were showing was sorely lacking. And in the background, both Ishbosheth and even David seemed to be fading into the background as the civil war kind of just erupted. So the first pasuk of Parak Gimel tells us that the civil war lasts for a while, and it's not going to go well for Ishbosheth's side. Right, David's house is getting stronger and stronger, and Shaul's house is getting weaker and weaker. Note something interesting here, by the way. Base Shaul. It doesn't. The pasuk does not even put David next to Ishbosheth. The pasuk puts David next to the house of Shaul. And this is going to be a point which the Navi is going to repeat again and again. We're going to keep on dropping Ishbosheth's name. It's like the Navi has so little respect for Ishbosheth. Nice guy, but terrible king. No leadership material over there. And he's just dropped. It's the house of Shaul. And this process of David getting stronger and stronger and Ishbosheth's team getting weaker and weaker, this is going to progress all the way through Parak Dalet. So we have four psukim over here, which take a time out and introduce to us some of David's children. So these guys are going to play a major role later on in Shmuel Beis and also in the beginning of Sefer Melachim. So it's worth taking like 5 or 10 minutes now to point out some of the funny things about the name of some of these people, which the Mefarshim right here on the spot address. So we're told David is in Chevron. We know David is in Chevron for 7 years from after the death of Shaul, when the men of Yehuda crowned him last week. Remember, last week he was crowned as king of Yehuda. He's only in Chevron. It's going to take 7 years until he's going to become king of all of Israel and then take over Yerushalayim. So here are the children who were born in that time. So Vayhi Becharo Amnon L'Achinoam HaYisraelis. So that's the firstborn is Amnon. He'll come up later on in the Sefer, candidate for the biggest lowlife in Tanakh. There's Amnon, right? And his mother is Achinoam, who is one of the two women that David married in Shmuel Aleph. In Parakhath Hey of Shmuel Aleph, when the whole parak was about David and Naval and Abigail. So at the end, the Navi told us that after David married Abigail, he married another woman, Achinoam, who also seems to come from a prominent family in Shevet Yehuda. So Amnon, even though Achinoam marries David second, she has the firstborn son. So he's going to be the crown prince for now. And then the runner-up, not surprising, Avigail has the second son, Mishneu Kilav. But we'll talk about Kilav for a second, because the pasuk here is funny. La Avigail Eshes Naval HaKarmeli. It's funny that the Navi calls Avigail Naval's wife, right? Like Naval is Naval's dead. So and not only dead, but it was a big deal that Naval died in Parakafe. That was one of the happier moments in Sefer Shmuel, was when Naval died. So it's kind of strange for Abigail to be called Naval's wife. So we got to come back to that one. Third son is Avshalom ben Maacha. So, of course, the famous Avshalom. We got to talk about him because his mother is Bas Talmai Melech Geshur, the daughter of a king from Geshur. Geshur is a little country like on the other side of the Kinneret, by the Golan. So what's up with her being the daughter, Avshalom's mother being the daughter of a king in the Golan? David is down in Hebron. We need to figure that out. Okay, fourth son, Adoniah ben Chagis. That's going to be the son who's going to rebel in the beginning of Melachim Aleph, but we don't hear anything from him for Sefer Shmuel. The fifth son, Chamishi, Shephatiah ben Avital. We don't hear anything about him, but I think Rav Bazak in the VBM had a nice point here, which is that as the Chazal say that the house of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Nasiim, are descendants of David HaMelech. So I'll be honest, I always thought that they were descended from some of the later kings. But apparently Chazal say that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's line descended from this guy, descended from Shephatiah ben Avital, who obviously was not a king. And he suggests that one of the points that Chazal want to make is that all these earlier brothers are going to be fighting over the kingship of Shalom and Amnon and Adoniah. And it's the first real brother over here who is not interested in the Malchus, whose descendants are going to be the Nesiim. Interesting suggestion. Okay, then finally, another son who's very strange, Vashishi Yisra'am le'egla eshes David. So we never heard of this woman, Egla, and it's strange that she's called David's wife, because we've seen five wives so far, but none of them have been called David's wife, so that's unclear. So again, just to recap the ones we need to clarify a little bit, Caleb is a little bit strange. Why is his mother called Abigail, the wife of Nabal? That's a little bit weird. Then the third son, Avshalom, is a little bit strange. Why is his mother the daughter of a Canaanite king? And this last person, Yisra'am, whose mother is Egla, who for some reason is being called Ashes David. So let's take them one by one. So we'll talk for a minute about Kilab, the son of Abigail. If you look in Divrei Hayamim, so it turns out that that is not the name which we have for him in Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim, we're told that his name is Daniel. Hasheni Daniel, L'Avigail HaKarmelis. So Rashi right here on the spot flags that. And there are a couple of different proposals for why, for what exactly is going on over here. So Rashi quotes the Gemara, which says, I think the Medrash actually, which says that his name was Kilav. And this is a reference, if you think of the Medrash about Avraham and Yitzchak, the beginning of Toldos, Avraham, Holid, Yitzchak, why the repetition? Remember, Rashi says at the beginning of Toldos, Darat, because people were laughing and they said that Avraham was not Yitzchak's father, but actually it was Avimelech who was Yitzchak's father. And so to prove them wrong, Yitzchak had the exact same face, right? He looked a spitting image of Avraham Avinu. The Radak, by the way, says that he wasn't just Avraham's physical resemblance, but also in terms of personality, in terms of Midos, he was just like Avraham Avinu. But that's the piece with Yitzchak. In a case of doubtful paternity, so Yitzchak looked just like Avraham. It's actually, I think, the same Medrash in Toldos, which says that is what is happening over here. His real name was Daniel, as is recorded in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. But Rashi says the late Sane Hador, right, the scoffers, which had said, Minaval Haisa Avigail Mi'uberes, that actually the father was not David, the father was Naval. After all, David marries Avigail very, very quickly. It's 10 days basically go by between when Naval is incapacitated, and then when Naval dies and David marries Abigail immediately. The halacha nowadays, we have to wait 3 months because of this exact issue. We do not want paternity confusion, but David marries Naval right away. So some of the late Sani Hador had said that actually Naval was Kilav's father. And so therefore, he looked just like David. Nabach, Klastrov, and Nidmela Avdiv, right? So Kilav would stand for Kulo Av. He looks just like the father. The Radak quotes this as well, The Radak says it's not a problem at all for him to have two names. There are many, many. You go through the Rahayamim, you see, it was very, very common for people to have two different names. Nowadays, you know, it's kind of a modern phenomenon to have middle names, right? If you look at Rishonim, I don't think we know really any Rishonim. There must be some guy who did a PhD or something on when middle names started to become a thing, but nobody had a middle name. The Rambam is Rav Moshe ben Maimon, you know, and Rashi is Rav Shlomo ben Yitzchak. Middle names are a pretty recent phenomenon. It's okay, just like recently we now have middle names. So apparently, in the time of Tanakh, it was common for people to have two different names. He says Rambam Bekasev. We can find this many, many times. Now the Radak, you know, we saw Rashi's explanation for why he was called Kilav, that he was Kulo Av, and Rashi has another explanation that he was an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. So he would embarrass Mephibosheth. Machlan Mephibosheth Ba'alacha. Mephibosheth was a huge Talmud Chacham as well. So Kilav was even stronger. But the Radak says, I'll tell you why he's called Daniel. He's actually called Daniel to reference, again, the Avigail novel episode. Why is he called Daniel, says Radak? Ki Amar David, Danani Kael Minaval. Right? Hashem has judged me against Naval. He has decided that I am on top, so I am rising. Naval is, you know, when Kilav is born, David is already king in Chevron. I'm king in Chevron. Naval is dead. I'm married to Avigail, who we saw in Parakhafei is like one of the most amazing people ever. And so that's the point that David is making with the name Daniel. Now, there is another really interesting proposal that Rav Maidan from the Gush makes in a long article. Points out there are two issues here which the pasuk does not explain, or at least that this approach does not really explain. One was the original problem: why is Avigail called the wife of Naval if Naval is dead? Right? Avigail is very, very much no longer Naval's wife, and in fact, you know, you could kind of wonder for Rashi, it's almost strange to be emphasizing Avigail's previous relationship to Naval. I guess Rashi will say, no, but the reason Pasuk is saying this is that despite the fact that Avigail had been married to Naval, nonetheless, her son looked exactly like David to show that David was the true father. Okay, that's probably what Rashi would say. But you could wonder why the Pasuk has to emphasize that she is Naval's wife. And note that Divrei Hayyamim does not do that, right? Divrei Hayyamim does not say Avigail, Naval's wife. It just says Avigail from the Carmel. Furthermore, points out that the name Kilav seems to have a striking reference to Naval's ancestry, because Naval was a Kalbi, which was a double entendre, right? The Navi was kind of making fun of Naval because you know, he had the personality of a dog. But it also seemed to refer to the fact that he came from the family of Kalev, an extremely prominent family in Yehuda. Kalev, Kilav, sounds awfully similar. So Benadnas has a very creative suggestion. And he suggests that this son Kilav, this is kind of a Yibum for Naval. Naval dies without any children. And David marries Avigail, this very prominent member of Shevet Yehuda, has died. So David, as a way of assuming his legacy, names the child Kilav after Naval's line of the family. That's a suggestion he makes, which is very interesting, very creative, take it or leave it. But either way, that's Kilav. Now, Chazal emphasized that Kilav was like one of the greatest tzaddikim of all time. He never sinned. One of four people who didn't sin. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that the four people who didn't sin, even though that's amazing, they also never really accomplished anything. So Kilav, whether it's because Kilav dies young, whether it's because he's just a pure, you know, Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim, who very clearly is not cut out for political leadership, he never gets involved in all of the dirty politics, which are really going to take over in the second half of Shmuel Beis. But so that's the son, Kilav. So we have two more sons we wanted to explain. One was Avshalom, whose mother, Macha, was the son of a king from Talmai from Geshur. So what exactly is going on over here? So the Radak quotes the classic Medrash, but we need to wonder about it a little bit, that Macha was a Yefas Toar. Macha was captured in battle by David, and this is the classic line. Why in Kitzeitzei is the Ben Sora Umbora next to the Yefas Toar, because you marry the Yefas Toar, and then you can have a son who's a disaster. So Macha is the quintessential Yefas Toar, and Avshalom certainly is the ultimate example in history of the Ben Sorer Umorit. The Radak endorses that, and the Radak just has an interesting comment. He says, you know, you think about life as Isha Eshes Yefas Toar, and he says, hey, what kind of values do we think that she is going to give over to her son? Yeah, she's captured, so she doesn't really have any choice. Of course, she's going to, you know, convert to Judaism. But she's not really, in it. And the sapling is going to look just like the root. So we have this contrast, right? We have Kilav, who looks, you know, Kilav, the son of Abigail, kind of the perfect mother, who looks just like David. And the third son is going to be Avshalom, who, even though he's a son of David, looks just like Mach. Okay, now, one piece to support that is that Avshalom has a half-sister, Tamar, who we'll talk about later on Shmuel Beis. So how on earth does he have a half-sister? If you marry the king, and this is going to come up in a few psukim, actually, right over here, and someone who's married to the king is never married to anyone else. So it's hard to understand how Macha could have a daughter from another father. Well, if she's a Yefas Toar, then that makes a lot of sense because she had married to somebody and now she's married to David. At the same time, though, it is a little bit odd because we would like to know when was the war that this woman Macha became a Yefas Toar? That's not so clear. Now, Geshur, we said, is up near the Golan. Well, David these days is down in Eretz Yehuda, right? Who has he fought so far? He's fought against Amalek, and he's fought against the Plishtim, and he has fought against some of the roving desert tribes in the south, right? That's what he did when he was living with the Plishtim. We've never really seen him fight in the north. It's not a place where he belongs. So it's subject to question, when did that war happen? What we need to explain is that Geshur is right next to Machanayim. Remember, we saw last week that Avner took Ishbosheth after the defeat of Har Gilboa, and he took him east of the Jordan River to Machanayim, the place where that name originally from Yaakov Avinu, the place where he met the Malachim as he comes back from Lavan. As Ishbosheth's kingdom grew, so it follows to reason that some of the local smaller Canaanite kings who were still there became allies of Ishbosheth. So as we see, the first pasuk of the Perek told us that David and Ishbosheth are having this long civil war. So some of the local allies of Ishbosheth probably fought in the war. And if Macha is an Ishbosheth, Yefas Toar, that is probably when she would have been captured, right? In one of the battles where David is fighting against Ishbosheth and his local allies. Now, Geshur will end up becoming an ally of David, actually, once David totally takes over. Even though these people are Kanani, they're not, they're from outside of Eretz Yisrael, so they're allowed to stick around, and he's going to become a local vassal of David. That's why Avshalom will end up, when he gets in trouble, he's going to run away to his grandfather. His grandfather's still alive, still doing strong. His grandfather looks like he was allied with Ishbosheth at the beginning of Shmuel Beis. He'll be a vassal to David later in Shmuel Beis. In the interim, his daughter married David HaMelech and became the third son. So didn't work out so badly for him. Okay, so the last son to talk about here, which is strange, was that woman, Egla. And the Navi told us, scrub for a second, the sixth son was Yisra'am, who was born to Egla Ishto, David's wife, Egla. And we have that both in Divrei Hayamim and in Shmuel, right? Shmuel, we say Egla Ishes David, and Divrei Hayam does the same thing, Egla Ishto. So why are we singling out Egla as David's wife? You know, if I had to pick one of these women to say Ishes David, I would have said Abigail. I would have said Abigail. Abigail is the one who we spent the most attention on in Shmuel Aleph. She's the one who we saw totally turn David around. She was the one who was able to snap him out of the Esav mode and back into the Yaakov mode. Abigail is amazing. She should be the one who's called Esav David. Why Egla? So that's where We have, that's the real basis for the comment of Rashi right here on the Pasuk, that Egla was really Michal, right? Michal, the daughter of Shaul, who's going to come up again in our Parak, and then really come up again in Parak of Vav. Why is she called Egla? Shaisa Chaviva Alav, because she was particularly beloved to David. He quotes a Pasuk in Shoftim, when Shimshon is yelling at the Plishtim, so he shows that a calf can be a euphemism for a wife. That's what Shimshon says in Shoftim Parak Yadalet. Lecharashtim Baglasi, you plowed with my calf. That's his euphemism for the Plishtim taking away the girl who was engaged to him. So if that is the case, that's why she's called Egla, because she was particularly beloved. And that would be why it's emphasized that she is Ashes David, because she is David's first wife. So if that is the case, so then that takes a stance on something which is going to come in a couple of prakim. When Michal is going to die in Parak Vav, the Navi is going to tell us that she did not have any children ad Yom Mosa, right? She didn't have any children until her death. And so we'll have to see, does that mean she didn't have any children at all? She died childless. Does that mean that she died in childbirth? Does that mean that she had children earlier? So Rashi says, based on this approach, it means that Michal had a child in Chevron. And then later on, after the falling out with David and Parak Vav, she does not have any more children. Right, and the Dat Mikra quotes from the Vilna Gaon, who has an interesting insight over here. The Vilna Gaon apparently, I couldn't find this inside, but the Vilna Gaon says, why emphasize again that she's David's wife? So Vilna Gaon says, let's think, where'd Michal go before now? Remember, after David ran away and Michal did not come with him, we'll have to talk about that, Shaul gave her to this man, Palti ben Laish, who's going to come up again in our parak. And the question was that wedding valid? What's the whole story? So the Vilna Gaon says the reason why the Navi singles out her to be Ashes David is to emphasize that this was totally Chadas v'Kadin. David HaMelech was correct. The marriage with David was valid. The marriage with Palti was invalid. And it's totally acceptable for Michal to go back to David. That's why it's emphasized that she is Ashes David. Okay, so that's just the background of that whole approach. Some of the other Mefarshim do not accept. The Radak and the Ralbag, they actually think that this woman, Egla, was Shaul's wife, which has its own reasons and its own difficulties, but we'll leave that aside for now. Okay, right, you see here, right, the Gra focuses, Shaul Nasan as Michal Bito, Ashes David, right? When Shaul gave Michal to this guy, Palti ben Laish, there again, the Navi had emphasized that she was Ashes David, so that's another support for this whole approach. Okay, fine. So now let's, you know, having gone through some of the sons and some interesting points about Kilav and Avigail and Avshalom and Macha and Michal. So now let's snap back into the civil war, right? Civil war, David is winning, Ishboshes is losing. And we're told in Pasuk Vav that even though Ishboshes' side is losing, there's one man in Ishboshes' world who is winning. And that is Avner. Avner ben Ner, David, Shaul's cousin, who was Shaul's general, who was the one who took Ishboshes in the first place and set him up as a puppet king. We saw last week that the Navi did draw attention to it, but it seemed that Avner won some phenomenal victories in the beginning of Ishboshes' reign over the Plishtim, chasing them out of the territory that the Plishtim had captured in the Battle of Har Gilboa. So remember Avner, because all of a sudden Ishboshes is the king in Emek Yisrael, the Israel Valley, which is exactly where Shaul had been defeated. So it seemed like Avner had won some major victories to win back the territory. So he's the general. He's the relative of the king. He's the one really calling the shots and running the show. But despite that, David is rising and stuff here is falling apart. You can imagine someone of Avner's leadership caliber, you know, to show up to work every day and his boss is, you know, this piece of milk toast, Ishboshes, that's not going to, you know, last very well. So he's going to do something very, very interesting is going to happen the next couple of psukim, and we need to happened and why Avner did what he did. There's one thing that's very intelligent. What just happened over here? Here? What's happening with that? Avner is seriously a talented political person. And we're going to see some of his political operations later on in the barrack. Man knows what he's doing. So that makes what's happening here like pretty shocking. As Navi says, Shaul has a Pilegesh. Her name is Ritzpah Bas Aya. Okay, fun fact. Why do we really care that Shaul had a Pilegesh? She'll come up at the end of the Sefer, but why do we care? Well, Vayomer al Avner Madua Bas al Pilegesh Avi. He said to Avner, why did you sleep with my father's Pilegesh? So that came out of the blue. What is going on over here? Apparently Avner is accused of sleeping with Shaul's Pilegesh. Now, the halacha is black on white, you know, the wives of a king, and it's a black on white Mishnah, which I think I actually put in the source sheet, but we're going to see it now. We'll see it in a little bit. That's Aser. That's Kavod HaMelech. Someone who was married to the king, or even a Pilegesh to the king, no one else is going to marry them. So what is Avner doing? And did Avner actually do it? So what's Avner's response? He doesn't deny it. He doesn't apologize. So Avner says, he was extraordinarily angry. And not just angry, but extremely angry. Vayomer harosh kelav anochi asher liYehuda. A few different ways to understand this pasuk. Whether it means, Rashi has a couple of different takes. Does it mean, am I the head of the dogs for Yehuda? Am I a dog head for Yehuda? And remember, the Shevet Binyamin, they hate Yehuda. They're fighting with Yehuda. So, you know, it's bad enough to be like, to be, you know, a dog, or to be the head of a dog, or be the head of the, in charge of the dogs. To be that for Yehuda is even worse, right? That's one way of understanding it. Rashi says, if you look at the trap, you can read it differently because the trap, there's a pashta over here on Rosh, and then there's a munach, a zarka munach segol. So the way you lane it, I should have done this to make sure I'm correct, but I think where you lane it would be harosh, kalev anochi, right? So Yehuda. So there's a pause after harosh, in which case, Avner is saying sarcastically to Ishbosheth, you know, it's not like I have the greatest job here. Am I the Rosh? What am I in this current job with you as you're falling apart as the king? I'm a dog for Yehuda, right? This whole situation is not working out for me. Either way, either he's saying what, you know, do you think I'm a dog? Or he's saying, I am a dog because you stink. I did so much chesed for Shaul and for his whole family because I didn't hand you over to David. Instead, I installed you as a puppet king. And then you come yelling at me about this woman. So Avner continues. Yosef. So Avner swears in the name of God. As Hashem swore to David, meaning to put David in charge, I am going to do that to him. Right? Hashem has sworn to David to make him king, to take the throne away from Shaul's house, to give it to David. I am going to do that. I'm going to get involved. So there's a whole lot we need to break down. First of all, this line of Avner shows something we said last week. Last week, we blamed Avner. We said Avner was totally incorrect when he set up Ishbosheth as king. And whether the rationale that he concocted for himself, which Rashi said, the drasha he came up with, he knew it was wrong. He knew that it was wrong to go with Ishbosheth and to stick with the house of Shaul. He knew that Hashem had chosen David. He was there when Shaul himself said that to David. And it was Avner's choice in the moment, that selfish choice to pursue what was best for him personally, which led directly to this whole civil war. So we see that here black on white. We know that Avner knows better. When Avner gets down to the dumps, and maybe more importantly, when Avner sees that the ship that he's on is sinking and there no longer is any benefit to him personally to sticking with Ishbosheth, so now the Yetzer Hara goes away and he could say, everyone knows that David is supposed to be king and I'm going to go do that. I should have done it one parak ago. I should have done it 7 years ago when it actually would have made, could have saved lives, made a difference. But now Avner comes around. Okay. Second thing to note, and some of the more modern Mefarshim point this out, is that look what we have again in Pasuk Yud Aleph over here. V'lo yachol od lashiv es Avner davar miyirasa osa. He couldn't say anything to Avner because he was so afraid of him. So that's like classic Ishbosheth, right? You know, he sums up the courage to attack Ishbosheth, to attack Avner. Avner yells back at him and he just wilts. But we don't see Ishbosheth mentioned by name. And that's the third time in this parak that we've had that. We had that last parak as well, but we have that here. Lo yachol od. Who couldn't push back? He couldn't push back. Who is that? Pasuk Zion, Vayomer al Avner. He said to Avner. Who is it who said it to Avner? We know from the context that it is Ishbosheth, but it's the Navi's way of just showing contempt for him, right? This guy is such a nothing. He's such a nobody. He's such a non-entity to Avner that his name does not even appear in the Pasuk. It's an amazing way for the Pasuk to communicate just, you know, what a non-leader Ishbosheth was. Again, nice guy, but not a leader. And we just see, you know, he tries to come up against Avner, and Avner just smacks him down. Now, we need to ask, finally, did Avner actually do this? Did Avner actually sleep with Shaul's Pilegesh? And if so, then why? So, truth is, most of the Mefarshim, the Barbanel, the Malbim, say, yeah, fact is that absolutely, right? Avner does not deny it, right? You could say Avner didn't deny it because he was so angry, but Avner didn't deny it. And Avner decided that the best defense was a good offense, right? So when he's accused of sleeping with Shaul's wife, so he doesn't respond, he just responds by yelling at Ishbosheth. Right? Barbanel says, look, you see from the non-denial that this proves that what Ishbosheth accused him of was absolutely true. Right? He didn't apologize, he didn't make excuses, you know, he just got, how dare you even bother me? I can do whatever I want. Now, the Or Sameach and the Malbim, and it was great, I can quote on Or Sameach, right? Rav Meir Simcha Cohen of Devinsk, who has a comment on, in the Rambam, there's a halachic point over here. Because the Mishnah tells us, Ein nosin almanaso, it is forbidden to marry the widow of a king. So they're both making the same point, Rav Meir Simcha and the Malbim. Well, let's look at the Or Sameach, because it's not often you quote it in Or Sameach and Nabi Shir, so let's take advantage. So he says, "Aye, what about Avner? So how he assumes like the pshat that Avner did actually do this. Nira de o almanasa mutares liish acher, lemelach acher, that another king can marry the widow, which is the position of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. Oh, pilegesh mutares lemelach acher, or even according to the Tanakhama, who thinks that the widow of a king cannot marry anybody, cannot be married to anybody, even though the full wife widow of a king cannot remarry even to a king, the pilegesh of a king can marry another king. Right? So those are the two explanations that the Rosh Hashanah has halachically for what's happening. If you think that, like Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, that the king's widow can marry another king, so that's what's happening here. If you think like the Tanakhama, that the king's widow cannot, well, a pilegesh, you know, a concubine is one level below that, and that's acceptable. Now, okay, what about Avner? Avner's not a king. Avner's a general. Ah, so here's the last part of the puzzle, and it's important for how Avner considers himself. Vaya savur Avner, shahu chashuv kemo melech umutar ba vidok. Avner's point to Ishbosheth that, hey, I'm the one running the show. So, for all intents and purposes, I have the status of a king. And that's exactly the message that Avner is sending to Ishbosheth. So if Avner really did it, what's he doing? He's sending Ishbosheth a message. You're a nobody. In theory, you know, you may have the title of king, you may wear the crown, but de facto, I am the king. And the Malbim says that Avner was sending exactly the same point. Okay? Now, we can wonder, though, like, why would Avner want to do that? And if Avner is so intent on demonstrating, the halachic piece is totally good, Right? That's why Avner thought this was totally mutter, because he says, you know, I have the status of a king for all intents and purposes. But we still also could wonder, like, why does Avner, what's his goal? And why does he react so extremely to Ishbosheth? So I would suggest, and this can be true, either if Avner actually did sleep with Shaul's wife, or if he didn't, it's also possible that Avner wanted to spread a rumor that this happened. Either way, it can lead to the same point, which is maybe Avner was trying to set up a pretext to abandon Ishbosheth. I think it really might be the pshat in the psukim, is that Avner realizes things are going south. He's looking for an opportunity. He's looking for an excuse to ditch Ishbosheth and make an alliance with David. And by creating this fallout over Shaul's Pelegesh, whether by actually being with her or by just, you know, leaking rumors that he had, so that is going to give him the pretext to do what he had wanted to do all along. Maybe that's why he reacts like so over the top to Ishbosheth and then immediately says, I'm going to go running to David. So that's a suggestion I make. I think it really makes a lot of sense in terms of explaining Avner's rationale, because we're going to see Avner is a super talented general, and he's also a very talented political operator. Let's look at a few more psukim in the parak, and we'll see that clearly, and then we'll stop before things go downhill for Avner. We'll cover that next week. So pasuk yudbeis. So Avner, who now has just yelled, Ishbosheth tried to speak up to Avner. Avner just swatted him down and left Ishbosheth like crying in the corner, nothing left to say. So now Avner sends messengers to David. He says, the letter begins, L'mi ha'aretz. That can mean that could be reference to Hashem, or that could be reference to David. And he says, very simple, short and sweet, Karsa Brischa Iti, make a treaty with me. I think they quote the Vilna Gaon also as saying that there's a difference between a bris et and a bris imi. I think a bris imi, I think the way he says this, is that a bris imi means one person is on top, one person is on the bottom. But et means that we're equal, I'm pretty sure. V'hine al yadi imach la'asei b'lechas kol Yisrael. And what's the deal? If you team up with me, I will deliver all of Kol Yisrael into your hands. Avner feels sufficiently comfortable politically that he can deliver the support of all the other Shvatim to David. Now, David has a fascinating response. It shows David's discipline. It also shows some of David's political skill. So David, in theory, should just say yes, right? I mean, it's an offer which seems too good to refuse. But David says, no, I want more. Vayomer, tovani achros yitcha bris, ach tavarach harich hashal meyitcha limor. I just want one thing. It starts like very nice, right? I'll make the covenant, but there's one thing that I'm going to ask from you. And then it starts out nice, but then David also clearly puts a hard edge, right? I'm going to ask for something, but I'm going to demand it. I'm going to demand it nicely, but I'm going to demand it. Lo sir es panai, you will not see my face. Ki im lefnei aviachas michal bas Shaul, v'vachal eros es panai. You need to bring Michal bas Shaul with you. Now, what's David's goal over here? So we could wonder about the personal situation with him and Michal, but there's clearly a political move over here. Michal is Shaul's daughter, obviously. David can become the king of Klal Yisrael, both by rights of the support of Shevet Yehuda, which is the tribe which is supposed to have the kingship, and as the son-in-law of Shaul. That was Yehonasan's plan all along, was that David can become the king. He's the son-in-law of the king, so that makes sense. He's Mishpacha. So David wants to bring that around. That's how we're going to make the transition from the house of Shaul to the house of David, through a marriage alliance. Now, then David sends a note to Ishbosheth, which is interesting because it seems like Ishbosheth is such a nobody that he has to go along with this whole plan, right? Avner, and who is it? One of the... Did I write this down? Who this was? Maybe it was Radak. I'm not sure. But one of the Mefarshim suggests, that Ishbosheth is going to be involved over here. Avner will be the general. Ishbosheth will be the Mishneh LeMelech, will be the second to the king. And like it or not, you know, that's the deal that he's going to go along with. Give me my wife. It's not as Ishti, right? And first David stresses that she is his wife. Es Michal, Asher Erasti, Liv Me Arlos Plishtim, right? Who I betrothed me with the foreskins of the Plishtim, which I killed. David emphasizing, and this supports the view that that David and Shaul had a halachic debate about the legality of the Kiddushin, and that's why David is emphasizing this over here, right? And so this can be very nice. What this really can be is this could be Yehonasan's original dream brought back to life in some form. Yehonasan's dream had been David as the king, David as Shaul's son-in-law, married to Yonasan's sister, Yonasan as David's second in command. And so that original plan did not work. Shaul is dead. Yonasan is dead. But we have the potential for the basic version of that plan. It's here. It's available. The potential is there. Michal is going to come back to David. David is going to identify with Beis Shaul. Yonasan's not going to be the Mishneh LeMelech, but Yonasan's little brother, Ishbosheth, will be the Mishneh LeMelech. We'll have a peaceful reconciliation between the two houses, that mission that Yonasan had been obsessed with ever since he met David, a goal that David wanted very badly as well. That is the dream that we have over here, right? And it's going to come undone at the end of the parak, as we'll see next week. But I think the next couple of psukim already indicate to us that this is not going to end well. Because the last couple of psukim here, right, show us that this is not happening peacefully. Vayishlach Ishbosheth v'kachah me'im ish, right? And the Navi stresses, Ishbosheth sends, he took her from her husband, me'im Paltiel ben Lahish, right? It doesn't just say he took her from Paltiel ben Lahish, he took her from her husband, he took her from Paltiel ben Lahish. They also point out that there are two ways you can refer to husband. The husband can be referred to as a Baal, and a husband can be referred to as an ish. And an ish is the term which connotes more love and affection. And that is specifically the term that's used over here. Paltiel ben Lahish apparently has great love for Michal. We don't know what Michal feels, but she's being taken away from her new husband to be given to David. The Pasuk design continues, Vayelech ita yisha halocha v'chachara. Her husband follows along with her Nebuch all the way until they get to Bachurim. And then Avner, tough guy, says, Lech Shub, you go back. And he turns around. But then Avi gives us this really interesting window into the human tragedy, which is going to be necessary in order to pull off the political vision, which might give us a sign that this hopeful, rosy, optimistic view of fulfilling the dream that David and Yonasan had together in Shmuel Aleph, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's too late for that. And we're already seeing some of the warning signs. Both Michal and Rizpah, right? Shaul's Pilegesh and Shaul's daughter, we see the women in this parak just being used as political pawns. You know, Avner using Shaul's Pilegesh as a political pawn for what he wants to achieve. David and Avner together using Michal as a political pawn for what they want to achieve. And we can get the sense that a plan which is using that level of, if that's what's necessary, the ends do not always justify the means. And if that's what's necessary to make this plan come together, we might sense that it's not going to work out the way that they're hoping right now. As lovely a view as it is, it's running into trouble. So just one last point that we should make. We should just see the next couple of psukim, because this will really give us a sense of Avner's skill. So after Avner does what he had said he was going to do, now we see Avner turn from the general and really now be the political operative. So Avner goes to the Ziknei Yisrael. So those are the elders, the leaders of the other Shvatim, Ephraim and Naphtali and Asher. He goes to them first and he says, look, really interesting. Remember earlier, Avner said, everyone knows that David is supposed to be king, that Hashem chose David. So he says to these guys, and for a long time, you've wanted David. David has been the young, successful, charismatic guy for a long time. Already in the time of Shaul, David had significant political sympathy. It was only Shaul's, you know, sheer force of will that kept people in line. Hey, everyone likes David. Everyone loves David. From David's first appearance on the scene, everyone loved David. Everyone wanted David to be king. They weren't going to kill themselves by supporting him, but that's who they wanted. He says, "Now you have your now you have your chance. Beata Asu, do it, do it." Avner, the man of action, right? He says to them, "Look, this is what you want. You know, seize the moment. This is your day." And then, after you know, couching it in personal incentives, Avner couches it in religious incentive language. We know that this is the Ratzon HaBoreh, right? It's like you have to admire Avner's, like, you know, cynicism, because where was he until now with this message? But we know that he means it. He knows it's true, right? He denied it when it was not helpful for him. Now that it is helpful for him, he's going to embrace it fully. So that's not great, but he says it. I highlighted this red because the Dot Mikra has a really important point, which is that this is the first time David is ever called Hashem's Evet, right? David is called the Evet Hashem again and again and again and again. Right here is the first time. Why is it so important? We'll see in 30 seconds. So then Avner then continues, and after Avner lines up the other Shvatim and gets them on board, then he circles back to Binyamin, right? Which is probably the hardcore support for Ishbosheth. But look, once Avner has the other Shvatim lined up, so then it's a fait accompli. You know, then he can go to the rest of Binyamin and he can say, "Look, guys, you know, this is where things are going. Cut your losses and get on board." And sure enough, they do so. Right. So it's a very impressive maneuver by Avner. Just first he gets the other tribes, then he even gets Binyamin. Now he travels to David and Hebron and he tells him that we pulled the whole thing off. And then after he does so, Avner says, "Look, I'm going to go back and I'm going to gather for Adoni HaMelech es Kol Yisrael. And we're going to have, this is the real dream. I'm going to get everyone together. They'll make a bris with you. You'll be the king over all the Shvatim, whoever you want." Right? It's beautiful. Peace. Everything is all well and good. Dan Mikra points out here as well that this is the first time that David is called a Melech. It's first time with David, someone refers to David as a king. So I just want to close by saying something about David, because next week David will come in for criticism. But we should emphasize over here that it's the first speech, the two things that define David. He's a Melech of all of Klal Yisrael, and he is an Eved Hashem. And those are the two, right? Those have to combine in order for it to work. You can't be a true Melech of Klal Yisrael unless you are an Eved Hashem, unless you realize who the Melech Malchayim Lachem is. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those two are put together for the first time together, and that David has to be called an Eved first, and only after he's called an Eved can the Navi introduce us to the concept of him being a Melech. He needs both of them, but the Eved piece is the one that has to come first. So where we stand now, we have premonitions, right, but only very faint premonitions, that things, it took some ugly activity to get to this point, but we're at a moment of real amazing potential. Avner and David have made a bris. All the Shvatim are on board. We have the potential for Shalom, which has eluded us for so long. And the dream of David and Yonasan looks like it finally might come to fruition. So next week, we'll see how it all falls apart. But, you know, at least for 1 week, we end on a note where things look like they might be going really well. Okay. So, stop recording.